Okay, Alexander, we have got to talk about Turkey. And there is just so much going on. There's the NATO ambassadors. There's obviously the economic situation, which still hasn't cleared up. And the lira is still not in a very good shape. We have the F-16s vis-a-vis the S-400s, which is a whole nother topic that we should touch upon. And we have this situation with Mr. Kavala, and you'll explain what's going on there, and that has to do with the NATO ambassadors and some statements from Erdogan. I've rattled off like three, four different topics. Which one do you want to start with first? And then we'll just kind of go one by one in each segment and just kind of knock these out. So which one do you want to start off with first?
We have to start with the economy because the economic situation is really what I suspect lies at the bottom of everything. All of these other stories link up with the situation in the economy. Now, what Erdogan has just done is he's again changed the leadership of the central bank. He's got the central bank to cut interest rates. The lira, the Turkish currency, has predictably fallen. Inflation is rising. The economy is in a very bad shape. The international financial institutions are now becoming very concerned, and the international investment community is starting to boycott Turkey. So the economy in Turkey is in a very, very bad shape indeed. At one level, Erdogan, and I think this goes beyond ideological considerations. I mean, he doesn't like high interest rates. He's, of course, and this is a fact people always forget about him, a devout Muslim. And Islam, of course, is extremely hostile to interest on loans. So he probably has a religious element to his dislike of high interest rates. But beyond that, I mean, the entire way in which the Turkish economy has been structured has been based upon a very low interest rate environment. It's very driven by the construction industry, by the building industry, in which members of Erdogan's own family are highly invested. And of course, he doesn't want to see high interest rates. He wants to see low interest rates. And he's prepared to trade off that with higher inflation. But of course, that policy is now creating all kinds of problems for Turkey and an economy that depends on high rates of investment in the construction industry and on low interest rates has difficulty attracting funds. Bear in mind that Turkey runs high deficits both in its budget and in trade, so it needs funds. So it's a steadily deteriorating economic picture. It's surprising in some ways that Turkey, that Erdogan has been able to hold things together for as long as he has done. We've spoken at various times about how it looks as if he's reaching the end of the road. He's always found some means of conjuring up something out of thin air on other occasions, either getting money from Qatar or getting money from China or whatever. But this time is becoming increasingly difficult. As I said, international investors are losing patience or have lost patience. And in the meantime, the growing inflation is causing falling living standards across Turkey, growing problems in the Turkish economy. And that, of course, is cutting into Erdogan's support within Turkey itself and is making his electoral and political position in Turkey increasingly difficult. So, as a result, he's making increasingly dramatic moves around his region in order once again to impress on the Turkish people that he is their leader, that he stands up for Turkey against the Westerners and all the others, that he's able to make Turkey great, or at least position Turkey as an important power. And we've seen that he's done a whole series of extraordinary things. He's just done a tour of Africa in which he's railed against the five permanent members of the Security Council. He says there should be Security Council reform, and he wants Turkey to be made a permanent member of the Security Council, presumably. He's involved himself increasingly in the confrontation in Afghanistan. He seems to be working now. He's worked trying to become best of friends with the Taliban. But he's done also much bigger moves. He's also reacted very strongly to the US, to the Western decision to criticize this business with this Turkish businessman, Kavala, who is in prison in Turkey. We'll deal with that in more detail. But he's also angling to buy F-16 fighter jets from the United States, which looks to me to be intending to create yet another source of confrontation with the United States. So he's taking all of these moves at the same time. And I would add that he's taking these moves shortly after he hosted Merkel in Istanbul, where, you know, it all looked as if Merkel and Erdogan were the best of friends and they praised good relations between Turkey and the EU. But we see in reality that Erdogan doesn't mean a word of it.
Yeah, okay, so let's stick with the F-16s. This is a bluff, the F-16s, yes, in order for him to pave the way to buy, to continue to buy the S-400s, or to deal at least with Russia and the S-400s, and perhaps other Russian military weapons and equipment, right? I mean, this is a bluff. He knows that the U.S. is going to turn him down, and so once he gets turned down by the U.S., he can then say, you know what, you turn me down, I can just deal with Russia. Correct?
Absolutely, absolutely, because the U.S. hasn't rejected the request for F-16s, for modernized F-16s, but there is no conceivable way that Congress will authorize the sale of these more advanced F-16s. And beyond that, why would Turkey even want more advanced F-16s? I mean, the F-16, when it was fielded in the 1970s, was one of the world's best fighter jets, one of the world's most advanced fighter jets. It's still obviously the backbone of the Turkish Air Force, and more advanced versions of the F-16 that the Turks are, that, you know, claiming they want to buy, would undoubtedly be an enhancement of that air force. But it is yesterday's aircraft, whereas the F-35 that the Turkish military had previously committed itself to buying, that is the, you know, most advanced fighter jet that the United States is currently building. So they've been frozen out of that sale. They don't really want the F-16. They don't really expect that the United States is going to sell them the F-16. They know that the United States will refuse. They know that because Congress is bound to refuse. So they're preparing the ground for a rejection, which will then make it possible for Turkey to take the next step, which is to go to the Russians, and it really does look like the Russians, firstly to buy more S-400s, and Erdogan has confirmed that he now wants to buy a second batch of these missiles, but also, I suspect, to buy fighter jets from the Russians. And the fighter jet that's been talked about is either the Sukhoi 35 fighter jet, which is a more advanced fighter jet than the F-16, but not a fifth generation fighter jet, or possibly the two new Russian fifth generation fighter jets, comparable in technological effectiveness to the F-35, the Sukhoi 57, which is now entering service with the Russian Air Force, or the Sukhoi light fighter jet that we saw displayed at the recent air show in Moscow in August. I suspect it would be the second, by the way, because the Russians seem to have designed it specifically in order to sell to countries like Turkey. So I think that's what he's edging towards doing. It's to provide him with another way towards buying more Russian equipment as he takes further steps to distance Turkey from the United States. Why is he distancing Turkey from the United States? Well, let's get on to that in a moment when we talk about the other big issue, which is the Kavala affair.
Yeah, we'll get to that in one second. I have one question to ask you. Mm. The more he purchases from Russia, no, the more we're dealing with a Turkey that is ultimately moving away, not only from the United States, but from NATO. And it seems that by purchasing Russian military equipment, specifically S-400s, Erdogan is remaking Turkey's military. Would you say that he's remaking his military in anticipation of the trajectory that it's not going to be a Turkish military geared towards NATO, but a Turkish military geared towards a more independent a geopolitical stance, and maybe even perhaps more of a Eurasia alignment?
Yeah, I think that's exactly what it is. I think that's exactly what he's up to and what he's doing. I have to say, I think the Russians must be saying to themselves that this investment that they made of selling S-400s to Turkey has repaid itself in massive ways that they never expected. I mean, when it was first suggested that the S-400 should be sold to Erdogan, there were lots of Russians who opposed it, and it took Putin's personal intervention to make it happen, because they were saying, what are we doing selling this extremely advanced air defense system to a NATO country? I mean, it doesn't make any kind of sense. I don't think they anticipated that it would create this crisis between Turkey and the United States, and between Turkey and NATO. So that's very much the way it's turned out. And the fascinating thing is that instead of dialing back, Erdogan is doubling down. He wants to buy more of these air defense systems, these S-400 air defense systems from the Russians. And now he's angling to buy fighter jets from the Russians, because that seems to be very much the long-term agenda. Now, the US and NATO were, to put it mildly, unhappy about the S-400 sale. But if Turkey buys fifth-generation fighter jets from Russia, jets like the Sukhoi light fighter, for example, that for NATO is a red line. I think that at that point, Turkey's continued membership in NATO is in jeopardy. I mean, in serious jeopardy. And that would mean a Turkey that is reorganizing its military and changing its geostrategic relationships, moving away from NATO, moving closer towards the Eurasian powers, but also developing undoubtedly its own independent military systems. Turkey has a very large defense industry, by the way. As we know, it builds drones and all kinds of other equipment. Most of that equipment that Turkey builds, it builds with from technological parts. It imports from other countries, but it has an advanced industrial base in terms of military technology, notwithstanding that. And it looks as if what Erdogan wants to do is he wants to develop that even further, and wants to develop even more advanced systems. He knows he's not going to get the technology from the Americans. He looks like he's turning to the Russians, and he's looking to help for Russian help to upgrade his military industrial base. Now, that apparently was a major topic of discussion between Putin and Erdogan when they met in Sochi a few weeks ago.
I wonder if that was a discussion between Putin and Erdogan and Merkel as well. I'm sure it was a major point of discussion between those two leaders as well. On a quick side note, there is some Greek publications. It could be propaganda rumors, but they said that Erdogan actually tried to get into the software of the S-400 and try to understand how the software works, which they found impossible to do. And they actually screwed things up so that Russian engineers had to actually come to Turkey and to reboot everything in the S-400 systems. But basically the point is, according to some Greek publications, that the Turkish military and Erdogan were trying to figure out the technology behind the S-400s, the software technology, and they couldn't crack it. So they kind of messed it up, and Russians had to come back in there and fix things. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's what I read here.
We don't know whether it's true or not, but it's entirely plausible. I mean, it would make complete sense. And that wouldn't surprise me at all if it did indeed happen. I mean, you know, the Russians and the Turks, they have very close relationships, but at the same time, they're the best of frenemies, if you like. I mean, because they also, this is the other paradox of Erdogan's policies, because at the same time as he seems to be tilting now increasingly towards the Eurasian states, he also has these constant tensions with Russia over Syria, over Libya, over the Caucasus, wherever. And, you know, things are never quite entirely easy between these two powers either.
Yeah,
but that's Crimea, and all these things. Exactly.
So, okay, let's continue to focus on how Erdogan is pissed off at NATO officials and Western ambassadors and leaders, and that takes us to Osman Kavala. And this story is interesting because Erdogan is actually pretty furious with the statement that was issued by 10 envoys, and that was done earlier in the week, where they pretty much called on the Turkish government to release Mr. Kavala, who, according to Erdogan and the Turkish government, was behind a lot of protests and even the 2016 botched coup attempt as well. Even though, Alexander, there are courts that have found Kavala to not be behind those events. So it's a bit of a murky situation, but Erdogan is not happy with the envoys. Just to give you the countries that made the statement to the Turkish government to release Kavala, it was Germany, Canada, Denmark, Finland, France, the Netherlands, New Zealand, Norway, Sweden, and the United States of America.
Yes, well, I think this is going to be a red rag to the bull for Erdogan because, despite the fact that, as you correctly said, Turkish courts have repeatedly acquitted Kavala, he remains in prison. Erdogan seems to have convinced himself that this person did indeed participate in some activities against him. I mean, I've no way of knowing one way or the other, and I wouldn't necessarily rely on Turkish court decisions, by the way, as being necessarily authoritative. I mean, bear in mind, a lot of Turkish courts, judges, legal officials were themselves involved in the coup attempt in 2016. So, you know, there might be some degree of power struggle going on one way or the other. But the key point to always understand about this is that what would have infuriated Erdogan is that on a key issue involving his position as president and his government, because he is saying this person was involved in organizing those protests and in organizing that coup. That's what he, as the president of Turkey, is saying. On these issues, Western governments are disagreeing with him, and they're telling him that he must release this person. And he, of course, rejects that. He rejects that because he is a sovereigntist. About that's indisputable. He does not want Western countries coming along and lecturing Turkey about human rights issues and about how it should run its affairs. That in that he is, of course, very similar to many other leaders around the world. But beyond that, he will undoubtedly see that this support from the Western powers for this particular person as a sign that the Western powers don't really accept him as the legitimate president because they are backing the release of someone who Erdogan accuses of having tried to overthrow him. So from Erdogan's point of view, this is an extremely sensitive issue. And of course, he's reacted exceptionally strongly over it. Bear in mind, he's facing a very difficult situation in Turkey. We spoke at the beginning of this program about the deepening economic crisis in Turkey, the fact that he's losing support from key parts of his electoral constituency. So for the Western powers to come along and make these public statements in support of a political opponent, somebody who he clearly sees as a dangerous political opponent, is a sign that the Western powers are aiming to destabilize him. And given that only a few weeks ago we saw that there was the neocon grouping assembling in Washington with John Bolton in charge, which is clearly focused on trying to achieve the color revolution in Turkey, one can completely understand Erdogan's thinking.
Yeah, I was going to say the same exact thing. It looks like to me that the Western powers are paving the way. They're putting the foundation in place to engineer some sort of regime change in Turkey. And it looks like Erdogan understands this, but there's like a race against time because I think that Erdogan understands that he, or at least maybe he feels that he doesn't belong in the West. He doesn't belong in NATO. Maybe he feels that things are moving towards the east anyway, and towards Eurasia. That's, you know, that they're on the rise. The West is on the decline. Yes. I'm sure he saw that, or I'm sure he sees that with the Biden administration as well. It kind of confirms to him that, you know, I really shouldn't be, you know, aligning with these guys because they're falling apart. So I think the future of Turkey lies over there in the east. So I think he understands that. But on the flip side, I believe he realizes that if I make the move too soon, especially the United States could obliterate me, especially from an economic level with regards to the lira. And so he's trying to figure out, how do I make this transition? How do I buy more time? How do I make this transition over without having the U.S. just sink me with regards to the economic situation right now in Turkey? It's kind of a race against time, a game of chicken in a way as well. But, you know, Erdogan, it looks like Erdogan understands this, but he's trying to figure out the timing to make the move over the east and to ditch the west.
I think that's exactly right. I think that he's come round to that. That wasn't always his view, by the way. I think that at the beginning he did think of himself as somebody who would be, treated as a major partner by the United States and by the West. But as I say, he's fundamentally changed that view. But I think he also senses, too, that his position is becoming increasingly precarious. So he's now making these moves. He's not without skill. He's somebody who has, you know, genuine tactical abilities, as he's shown many times. That's why he's survived in power for so long. But at the same time, he doesn't have very strong cards to play, because Turkey's economy is in a very bad shape and getting worse. And as I said, opposition to him in Turkey is growing. So he's got to find some means of making this break. And at the same time, he's got to do it in a way that will both carry most people in Turkey with him and at the same time prevent a complete economic meltdown, which is, I think, you know, on the horizon now. Not an easy thing to do. So it's not impossible. And, you know, this is a little bit how Erdogan thinks. I mean, he would be furious by this move to back Kavala by the Western powers. He would see that as a major challenge regardless and anyway. But, of course, the other thing to say is if he starts declaring U.S. NATO ambassadors persona non grata, then going back to that F-16 sale, I mean, it's impossible to see how it could happen. And then there would be a refusal, presumably, to countenance the F-16 sale, at which point he goes ahead and presses on with buying his weapon systems from the Russians and is able to say to the Turkish people, well, look, we're in a crisis, but it's a crisis that the West has forced Turkey into. So there may be some elements of tactical calculation there, but as it's going to be very difficult, it's very difficult at the moment for him to balance out all of these issues and to find a clear way through. And we'll see how and whether he succeeds and what price the Eurasians will exact for rescuing him, if that's what they do decide to do. I'm not convinced, by the way, they will want to. I mean, the Russians find him a very difficult character to work with. But, you know, they might decide that they, you know, ultimately the prize of not so much winning Turkey, but of detaching Turkey from the West, from NATO, is so great that, you know, extending Erdogan a helping hand will be something that is in their interests. So as I said, we'll see how this plays out. But as I said, the game is becoming very complicated, and I sense we are in a kind of endgame situation. It seems to me that we either end up in a situation where Erdogan remains in power, Turkey becomes detached from the West in some form, and realigns to some extent, at least, with the Eurasians, or there is an economic crisis, Erdogan falls, and a new pro-American, pro-Turkish, pro-EU government is installed in Ankara. I think we are very much now edging towards that situation.
Yeah. Well, We're going to keep a close eye on this because this is huge. Yeah. All right. Go to theduran.locals.com. Go to the Duran shop. 10% off. Use the code REALNEWS. You'll find the link down below. And go to Super U, Rumble, Odyssey, and BitChute. You'll find those links down below as well. Take care.